This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 10. In this week's episode of Remarkable, I have a casual conversation with a former missionary turned sociology professor who has made a name for herself as a business coach and podcaster. Her research and work with youth and adult prisons has been published in the American Association of Criminal Justice Journal, and she's spoken at numerous conferences, workshops, and seminars both here in the U.S. and abroad. She's a successful entrepreneur and founder of the nonprofit organization Servant's Heart, and she and her husband lived in Honduras for 3 years, spearheading several social justice projects including building homes, food programs, and starting and directing a teen challenge center for ex-gang members. She has a passion for helping others, and she's known for her generosity and efforts to help people tap into their own superpowers so they can bring their greatest work into the world. During our conversation, she shares tips for getting and securing great guests, and the number one key to getting interviews with big names. You'll also learn several ways to get more exposure for your podcast, the keys to a great intro, as well as tips for becoming a guest on other podcasts. My guest is both inspiring and empowering, and I really enjoyed listening to her stories as well as her tips and advice. She's host of the podcast, Real Time, Real Men Only. Here's Nicole Welch. Nicole, welcome to the Remarkable Podcast.
Hey, David. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to chatting with you and learning a little bit more about you and your podcast.
I'm so honored to be on your remarkable show.
Thanks. Let's get familiar with each other so my audience can learn a little bit more about who you are for those that don't know you already. Tell us a little bit about your background and what you do.
I have a background in psychology. I have a master's in psychology, and I teach at the college here in Lakeland, Florida, in between Orlando and Tampa. And I was a missionary for years in Central America. I lived over in Honduras working with gang members. Been married 18 years, have two little beautiful kids. And I am basically, my full-time work is coaching and consulting. So I work with small businesses here locally. And then I also do online coaching actually for podcasting.
Excellent. Yeah. It sounds like you have a varied life.
Yes, I'm very eclectic. I get bored really easily. I could list other things that I do, but I won't.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm right there with you. So is your day job is the coaching, and what do you teach in the evening, or is your day job the teaching and you coach in the evening? Or
yeah, I have taught in the evening, but like this fall coming up, I'll have two during the day, back to back on the same Tuesday, Thursdays. And then yeah, I spread my coaching around. I have regular clients. I've had very loyal for like a year and a half now. And so my Skype coaching I do for podcasting is at night after the kids go to bed. So we do that, which I really enjoy because it's Skype and it's just easy.
Yeah.
The coaching I do for the local businesses, I meet one-on-one. So that takes a little more time, but you know, if you're pricing it to where it's worth it, to me, it's worth it. And they want the one-on-one. They want the face-to-face. They want the personal. I've offered to do it via Skype, but I find it way more meaningful when we're together.
And what types of things do you coach them on, or what do you help them with?
Communication. So I help them with the way they're presenting something, the way they're marketing something, the way they're pitching something. I help them writing scripts. I help the way they handle employees. My husband and I had a drilling business for years investigating sinkholes, which are actually kind of a big deal here in Florida.
Yeah.
And in other states, Texas and a couple other states. But So I had a lot of employees and they were men. I had a lot of 20, 21 year old, you know, 25 year olds, very rough, you know, they don't have degrees and they got paid really well. They were doing a lot of hard work. We made really good money drilling. And I had a lot of learning experience. My learning curve shot up really well there doing that business for years. And so managing employees, I find with small businesses, marketing, they don't pay enough money for, or they don't know anything about it, really. They don't have a lot of in-depth knowledge about it. And then they don't know how to handle or appropriately communicate with their staff or team. So I come in and kind of like help resolve some of those problems with hiring, firing, and making sure that your team is happy.
That's awesome. Yeah. I've been working in with small businesses for, I guess, 10 or 11 years now. And I know that's much needed. So kudos to you for.
Yeah, I saw that. Me and you have a lot in common, actually.
Yeah. When I was listening to some of your interviews, I was like, this should be fun. And what probably isn't out there is that I actually spent a summer as a missionary in Mexico City.
Working. Qué bueno. Where in Mexico were you?
I was in the heart of the city, or just on the outskirts of the city, which is a living organism in and of itself.
And very dangerous, actually. Yeah.
It was a life-changing experience. Yeah, really was. And I'll never forget it.
One month. That's awesome that you did that long a time, because most people don't, the longest they usually do short-term is two weeks. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I lived there for, I think it was 9 weeks total.
That's great.
Yeah, we lived with families. We were paired up. And so we lived with a local family, and our missions organization supported, gave them money, stipend for our food and care.
Did you get sick?
I did not. No, I lost a lot of weight because we walked a lot.
Yes. You walk a lot and you eat a lot fresher food.
And lighter meals. Yes. But it was a really great experience, and I wish I could go back.
It's a life changer. Me too. If my husband said, hey, let's go back tomorrow, I'd pack it up. I just told a friend that this morning and I would totally go.
And what were you doing in Honduras?
We went down, we started our own nonprofit called Servant's Heart Inc. And we didn't want to go with you know, any churches. We just didn't want a church plant. We felt like our call was to be servants. So we wanted to go alongside people and help them with whatever they were doing. So that was such an awesome way to frame it, you know, when we went down there, because we met so many people. I mean, we had Catholic friends and Mormon friends and Peace Corps friends the Peace Corps, which, oh my gosh, they really have to deal with a lot, which I didn't know until I got to meet them.
Sure.
And see what they would just shove them out in like Nowhereville and be like, okay, you're on your own now. And I'd be like, oh my God. And this one poor girl, you know, we wound up becoming really good friends with her. We had people, South Africans, come and live with us for months at a time. I mean, my husband and I are just very, kind of fly by the seat of your pants. Like, let's just roll with life and the flow of it. And so it was just an amazing opportunity. It was, like you said, life changing forever. Like it wasn't like, oh, that was such a great time, those 3 years we spent. I mean, it literally altered our whole mindset, our whole mentality about life in general. And we basically, the main thing we did was build homes. That's how we started out down there. We helped an organization called Hope for Honduras. And then I started, you know, teaching, and I'm really a teacher by trade. And so I loved teaching the women and the kids, but then we kept, you know, running into these gang members and we were like, you know, we know about Teen Challenge, and we had friends that had been in Teen Challenge before. And somehow, I don't know, you know how God works. We met the international director and they were like, hey, do you guys want to start up a program down here? We don't have one. It's a huge need. The political environment down there was horrid. The president's son was murdered by a gang member, and there was lots of violence. Honduras is one of the most violent countries in Central America besides Mexico. So, and it's one of the poorest. So we were like, sure, you know, I mean, we're kind of like clueless, and you know, no problem. So we did it, and man, it was. I just did a podcast this week about gringos and gang members and what we learned. We learned a lot. I mean, we made a lot of mistakes and we had a lot of successes and we had a lot of amazing moments and a lot of really difficult ones. And it, definitely stretched our marriage, you know. I mean, I always tell people as a therapist, I used to work on the psychiatric unit for about 7 or 8 years in psychiatric. And I would tell people, man, when that toothpaste, you know, when that tube of toothpaste gets squeezed, that toothpaste is going to come out. Yeah. stuff comes out of you that you never knew was there when you get squeezed. And we definitely got squeezed when we were over there. And we would not have gotten squeezed being here. So in ways that we got squeezed over there would never happen over here, because we were just put in situations where we really had to dig deep, and, you know, ugly stuff came out of us, and we were like, okay, we need to deal with this. And it was rough, you know, there was rough times, but we grew out of that. And I just believe, you know, we grow in our pain, and we grow in adversity. And I really believe that's the only way we grow. So a lot of my work with businesses is really sometimes about that, like kind of dealing with the inner conflicts or the projections that people do, and the way, you know, they're perceiving another person or, so I learned a lot of that almost like on the streets working with the gang members and having my background in psychology, but you know, degree's a degree. What do you do? I know people, I'm sure you do too, David, that have marketing degrees that don't know squat about marketing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I tell these young kids that
they're all on Twitter.
Yeah. And I'm like, come on guys, are you listening to any marketing podcasts? And they're like, no, there's, I said, oh my gosh, you're going to learn way more about marketing with these podcasts than you are in school.
Yeah.
And they're looking at me like I have three heads, and I'm like, come on guys, get with the program here.
So how many years ago was it when you were in Honduras?
We came back in December of 2004. So it's been a long time. It's so funny when people tell me that, because it feels like I came back like a year ago. And it's whenever I tell people that, I'm like, oh my God, I've been here this long in the States. And we went back and visited. I went back probably 3 or 4 times to visit. I mean, we left our hearts there with family, you know, but we haven't gone back to live in any long period of time.
Yeah, I was in Mexico City in the summer of 1996. It was after my sophomore year of college, and nice. I feel like it was yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's really weird. I think because it was so life altering that it just stays with you. So it's something that I could literally, and it was kind of fun. Gavin and I, my husband, were reminiscing about stories when we were podcasting about it. And I was just like, gosh, oh, I forgot about that. And I forgot, you know, then you kind of do realize, wow, it's been that many years since we were there.
So you came back from there and then you started the sinkhole business. Is that?
Yeah. We were living out of our bags in my parents' house, which will definitely make your creative juices flow. For 8 months I had to live with my parents that was a struggle. That was rough. Coming back, and we did talk about this on the podcast, it was harder than going, because I was literally in culture shock again from my own country, and everything was so fast and people didn't care. And I was like, what is going on here? So we were literally hanging windows. Okay. Like all day long, we were working for a friend who had his own business because we needed money. And so finally we settled in, Gavin got a job, and I was working at the psych unit in Orlando actually. And then I transferred over to Lakeland, and then we were like, hey, with his job is actually what spurred on the idea to do the drilling company. Cause it was almost like they were contracting out all the work, and Gavin's like, well, what if I just get some rigs and we do all the in-house? And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. And we didn't know if his, you know, boss would do it, but he did. Yeah. We had like no prep. We had to take, you know, and that was the other thing. I had to learn how to pitch to people and get private money investing, cause we didn't have any credit or anything. So
right,
I'm getting these private friends of mine, you know, to loan me 60 grand here and 60 grand here and 90 grand here, because, you know, rigs are expensive. They're like 100 grand. So we needed money we bought one rig.
Wow.
it was crazy in the beginning. I remember writing checks and hoping to God we would get paid so that I could clear the bank and make that, you know, I was just you know, and then within a year and a half, we were like raking. It was really crazy. And the one thing I will say, just to brag on my husband a little bit, like I saw that man with no money and I saw him with money and he never changed. I always tell people that, like we didn't, you know, go up and buy some crazy, we just kept living like we were. And, you know, I had my first baby, my son, Ezekiel, and we just kind of, our heart was so for missions anyway. We just wanted to pour back into missions, which we still do. And that's why we are entrepreneurs, really, is so that we can do that and really still maintain servant's heart, you know, having a servant heart for other people. So that's really what we wanted to do. So, yeah.
That's an awesome story. And I did look on LinkedIn and saw your servant's heart, that you're still a part of that. What is that organization? What do you do with it now?
Yeah, we're not doing too much with it now. We do some school sponsorship with it. Like I have a son I've never had. I've been paying for 7 years of medical school, which is kind of like a mortgage payment. So we do a lot of school sponsorship. And the thing about third world countries, and you know this, over in Mexico, is that women don't have really any opportunity. They're expected to be nannies or expected to be, right, you know, whatever. And so we saw that and we really wanted to sponsor kids for school. So right now that's all we do. We used to help other missionaries like with in Africa and other stuff, but currently the only main thing that we're doing for as far as sending money is school sponsorship.
That's awesome though. That's really
great.
And
when I say school, like, I mean, we have one that's in medical school, school that I'm bragging about. But really just regular, you know, like the education in Honduras, I don't know how it was in Mexico, but the top, you know, it was a sixth grade education. So you're hanging out with like a 35-year-old who is educated up to sixth grade, a guy, you know, yeah. So it's kind of crazy. So we wanted them to go further. We want them to go, you know, to secundario, like high school and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was on the near the outskirts of Mexico, and I think it grows by several thousand people per day, and they just come from the countryside and they just start building little houses on the outskirts of town.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It's just a different world. So how did you get into podcasting?
That's a good question. So my husband actually got me into it. He, you know, we had the business and he started just, you know, doing some self-studying, and we had done business training before. I had been in some MLMs just to make extra side money, and I realized I was pretty good at it. So we went to a couple trainings for that and learned more about business, because neither one of us had any degrees in business. He's an environmental scientist. So he started listening to podcasts, and he was like, you know, I'm gonna do a podcast. We did some investing when we did have, you know, some extra money with the drilling. We would invest in homes. And at the time, the market was crashing, so we could pick up a house for like 30 grand. I mean, it was crazy here in Florida. And so we were picking up houses here and there, you know, and buying them out and renting them. And so he's like, you know, I'm going to do a real estate podcast. And I was like, okay. And he's like, and he was really into it, really into real estate stuff, you know, investing on that aspect of, now he is a realtor, but before he was just investing. And I'm like, okay, honey, whatever. And he's like, you should listen to this episode. And so he would keep hounding me, like, listen to this podcast. You should listen to this. And I didn't even know how to download one on my phone. I'm like, how do I do it? And it's so funny because I do this now for people that I'll say, well, give me your phone and I'll see here. You already have the app. And then I'll download, like, which is a great way, by the way, to get them to know, listen to your show. Because then you can be like, here, oh, I'll download mine. And then here's some other ones that are really good. Yeah. Right. And so I tell people, you know, these are ones that are really good, and depending obviously on what they're into. So, sure. You know, if they're into yoga, I know the yoga people, and these are the ones you need to listen to. So that's, he was doing that to me. And then I was like, oh wow, that is really good. And oh my God, it's like radio. And I always joked about saying, you know, I just want to be on radio one day. I'm going to have my own radio show. You know, that was back in the day when, you know, podcasting, I mean, it was around, but nobody really knew about it.
Yeah.
And Gavin's like, well, you can, you know, you should just do one. And I was like, huh. And I was like, okay. And so I kind of like played with the idea like most podcasters do, and, you know, toyed with it. And then so, oh, I have to have a website and I got to do this and that. And he just really pushed me. He was like, listen, set a date and I'll help you, you know, in the beginning, and just do it. And I was like, all right. So that's how it began. And me and him, you know, with our whole experience and working with men, and I was finding myself counseling or coaching men with communication or relationships or business, you know, and I just had a way with, you know, guys. So I thought, well, it'd be really fun to do a men only podcast hosted by a woman's show. And, you know, that would kind of almost be like the hook, you know, like, why is a woman doing a real man show? And then it was funny, whenever I would say real men, people would freak out. They would kind of get all nervous, or, you know, people were like, what does that mean? What's a real man? You know? And so I kind of liked the, the traction I was getting from it. And at the time I did have a business coach because I was starting to do some speaking and business consulting. And he was like, yeah, you should do a show totally. And you should do a real men only and make it a point as a, you know, he was a great marketer. He was like, make it a point to only interview real men and that will be your hook. And let me tell you, to this day, you know, I was reading some of your questions about what makes a good podcast. I think the name says a lot. Like I look at book titles now and I look at, you know, just when I hear someone kicking around a title, it's got to have a hook. I mean, you've got to have that hook.
Yeah.
And Real Time, Real Men Only definitely still has the hook.
Yeah. And you just surpassed 100 episodes. Is that right?
I did.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's kind of crazy.
A big milestone. What's been the hardest part about either early on or somewhere in the middle? What's been the hardest part about keeping it going?
I was pretty good about the consistency. It is a lot of work. I think in the beginning, editing for me was hard. It just, I'm not techie and my husband is. He's like a sound engineer and I'm the singer and, you know, guitar player, like I'm the musician. So it's like, I just didn't want to edit. And I was always asking him to help. And he said, listen, you're going to need to do this on your own. And back then, I mean, nowadays it's so obvious. People are like, oh, I just outsource all my editing and whatever. But I just didn't even think about it, you know, and I guess I didn't want to pay the money and I was kind of like, this is my work. And I was maybe a little too almost like, I want to kind of have control of it. So it would take me like sometimes like three hours of editing and posting it. And I mean, gosh, that was so time consuming. But I will say for anyone listening, it gets so much easier. It's like child rearing, like when you're exhausted and the baby's born and you haven't slept and, you know, you're like, oh my gosh, is this ever going to get better? You know? And it's like, you know, all the stuff moms don't talk about, you know, it did get better. And now it's like, I can edit really fast and post it and have it up and running in no time. It's like, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And I will say I was pretty consistent and I did miss a couple, you know, shows, but or weeks, you know, where I had 1 week and I would always tell the listeners, you know, and blah, blah, blah. But it was very rare. I think I missed like two. And one of them was because I was at Podcast Movement.
Yeah.
So when I came back, I was so exhausted. I was like, I ain't doing a show. You know, I was just like, I'm not going to do one. But I think being consistent would be the most important thing. Just knowing, okay, this day I'm editing, this day I'm recording. You know, if you're doing interview based, have it on a set days where you do your recordings. And then really just getting the hang of it. I had a checkoff list for myself, you know, because my husband was like, okay, you're doing this now. I'm not helping you anymore. I don't have time. Because he was doing his and we were both working and we had the kids. And so I was like, okay. And I just had to do it. I had to get over my fear of technology because when I say I am not techie, I really am not techie. Like, I don't think people understand. And so I think anyone listening to this show, even today, who's thinking, I don't think I can do a podcast. I think everybody should be podcasting. It's opened up so many avenues and doors for me. And just, it's changed my life, really, to be honest with you, me and my husband's. And so I want everybody to be doing a podcast. But when I hear that objection of, oh, I'm not techie, I just immediately shut it down because I'm like, listen, honey, if I can do it, you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. When you say it's changed your life, what do you mean?
I mean, it's just given me a platform that is so accessible. I think that's the word I like to use when I'm talking about podcasting. I'm accessible to people that I want to be accessible to, and then I have an in with people that I would never have met if it hadn't been for the show. If I hadn't said, hey, you know, Ryan Holiday, I want to talk with you, or, you know, just different people that I was, James Altucher, you know, someone who I had followed for a long time, loving his writing and, you know, listening to his show and the way he interviews. I mean, granted, I don't know what his deal is with his audio, but just the way he interviews, I mean, he's got money too. Like, so I know he could, you know, but I think he's gotten a little bit better now, but just the way he would interview. And I knew growing up, you know, I loved hearing people's story and I loved, you know, just learning about them as a therapist, hearing what was going on the psych unit. You know, I heard everything. I mean, just crazy stuff. And so to me, that was exciting, you know, getting behind the mic and being able to talk to this guy who I don't even know and just hear his stories and really pull out, you know, what makes him, you know, who he is, and just asking those questions. And to me, that's been life changing. I've learned so much about myself. I felt like, and you won't hear a lot of people say this, but podcasting to me made me learn more about me than other people. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the missionary thing where they're like, oh, we're going to bless people, but then wind up being changed. Like it really is actually all about you. Yeah, like you're the one who winds up getting blessed. And I'm sure you blessed people, but you're the one who really winds up changed. For me, that's how podcasting was. I learned more about myself. I learned what I did like, what I didn't like. When I thought I'm a very decisive person, very, you know, dominant, strong personality. So like, I'm like, oh, I know what I want. But when I started podcasting, I was like, there's a whole new world out there that I don't even know about, you know, just even with business and marketing, the stuff I learned from interviewing people, I would have never learned in textbooks or books, you know, it just comes alive. And I'm a teacher, so I love that interaction. I love to have that energy going on. And for me, podcasting was just, it's just life, you know, it's life. It's getting to walk alongside someone for a brief moment. And it does. It changes me, changes how I think, changes my belief systems about certain things that, you know, maybe I specifically just kind of opening me up more and being more flexible to where other people are coming from.
Sure. That's a great perspective. How are you going about getting your guest? How have you connected, say, for example, with James Altucher or some of the other guests that you've had?
Yeah, I will say the one thing I would like, I don't usually brag about myself, but I do like to say,
please, go ahead.
I do love the challenge of getting guests. So I think it's, and so I mentioned Ryan Holiday, who I love. He wrote The Obstacle is the Way, and he has a new book coming out, and completely dogged me, right? And it's almost like being a multi-level marketer, I had said MLMs in the beginning. You get used to no's like really fast, right? And people scorn MLMs. They think they're evil, and I'm not in them anymore, but I made money doing them. You know, I mean, I needed it at the time. Sure. So I think that kind of gave me a little edge on just asking people. Like I didn't care. Like I'd be like, hey, James, so-and-so. And I would kind of leverage saying, I reached out to so-and-so and so-and-so, and you know, they thought it would be a good fit and blah, blah, blah. And I actually went to Claudia at the time maybe about 8 months ago. I reached out to both of them, and James had responded, but he never like followed up. He was like, yeah, that'd be great. And then I never heard anything. So I reached out to Claudia, and I'm persistent. So as a multi-level marketer, you learn to take no's really easily and rejection. And then you learn to be persistent because you have to eat. And so,
right.
and that's where I learned how to frame questions. So what I would do is I had almost like a little script, and I use this with my podcast clients, and I'll say, hey, so-and-so. And I would connect them to someone I've already known. So I'd say, oh, me and Tucker Max were talking about you the other day and your name came up, which was true. I would never lie. And he said, you know, you'd be good on this show or whatever. And so I said, I know you're really busy. Appreciate the consideration. Quick 30-minute interview. I would not take any more of your time. I've actually had people say, oh, Nicole, because you said it was only 30 minutes, I agreed, because sometimes other people will write and say, oh, it'll be like 45 to an hour. And that's scary to them. And I know, you know, when you're pitching or you're marketing something, you can't market in that scary, like, oh, this is going to take up your whole afternoon, or this is going to take, because they're out of there, man. I don't want to waste 45 to an hour of my time unless I'm really enjoying myself. So, you know, you don't know me. And I would always tell them what a great, you know, huge, because I was a huge fan of everybody that's been on the show. I would be persistent. I would continue. So it was funny. Ryan Holiday completely ignored me for literally a year. I think I wrote to him twice. I even offered to be a virtual intern for him for 2 days. This is how bad I wanted to be. And he's very introvert. So he actually wrote me an email 2 weeks ago out of the blue. It was so weird. And he told me about his new book, and he's like, I am so sorry. He actually apologized for not even responding, really, is what happened. Hmm. And he was like, I want to give you a free copy of the book, and, you know, let's stay in contact. You know, so it was just really cool. I was like, Oh, wow. Like, that's pretty amazing. So for anyone listening, if you haven't heard back from people, don't ever write them off. Don't be mad. Don't back talk, you know, definitely don't bad talk about anybody in the podcasting world. I feel like that's like, I love our podcasting community. I feel like we're very loving family and just, yeah, like very encouraging and edifying to one another. So I like this niche. I've been in internet marketing niche before, and it can be a little cutthroat depending on what you're doing. Real estate especially can be very, so I love this community, and I do feel like just making it short and sweet. Okay. And making it to the point and letting them know that it would be an honor and you know, they're busy and you're not going to take up much of their time. And then connecting other people that they know that you've either already interviewed or going to be interviewing.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. And I've been in that situation too, where I've already reached out to people and just haven't heard anything. And it's so easy for any of us to think that it's, you know, we're not good enough or it's about us, but typically it's not. It's they're just busy or they're shy or they're overwhelmed or they're in the middle of another project that you have no idea.
Right. And some of these guys were high profile, you know, I mean, Jason Gennard, these people are busy. Okay. Like they are, you know, doing a lot of things that I particularly may not be doing. You know, Grant Cardone is around traveling or, you know, whatever, speaking. So you've got to take into consideration their time and stuff. And ironically, Ryan Holiday wrote an article about that, just where we come off as expecting them to give us an interview or thinking, well, everybody wants to be interviewed. And that's not really necessarily true.
Sure.
So I think it's just really... And also, too, I would go with my gut of who I wanted to be on the show. I did not just randomly, you know, in the beginning, I think my big mistake was picking people, big A-listers that everybody else was having. And then when I realized they're all the same interview, and I'm like, okay, this kind of stinks. Like, I don't want to hear the same questions. I think that's a huge mistake that new podcasters make. So if you're listening and you're new, don't do that. you know, you can have A-listers on, just make it different, man. Listen to the other, that's another thing. Listen to the other shows your guests have been on. Listen to them. Jordan Harbinger I had on, and I listened to his other interviews very intently. And I wanted a different twist on, you know, how we did the interview. And there was a couple other guys. I can't remember right now their names, but I just remember going, you know what? Oh, Ari Mizell, which I haven't aired because he was in the airport and I need to edit out all the loud airport noises. But I took a totally different twist on his interview and completely not like any of the other interviews he did. So and it was stuff I was interested in, you know, like about health and about his children and about different aspects of women in productivity. So I actually, you know, kind of took it with a slight twist. You know, you don't have
to
change it up, but just add your take on it. I mean, this is the deal. You are so individual. No matter, even if you are interviewing the same person, if it's Tony Robbins and a gazillion people have interviewed him, you're individual. Be individual. Like take it with how you're going to, you know, make it different. Because you're unique. And so you're obviously, it's going to be unique because you're doing it and I'm not. And so, you know, be confident in that, I guess, is what I'm saying, you know, because that's going to make the interview exciting. And also be relaxed. Like I know a couple of them, I got nervous and I had to tell myself right before they got on, you know what? They're just people. Like, who cares? Like, they're just people, just like me and you. These aren't like rock stars. And even if they were, even if I was interviewing The Rock, who has totally denied me still to this day, who I swear I'm going to get on. But, you know, he's just a guy. Like, he has to go to the bathroom just like we do. So you have to tell yourself that, because I do believe, just like singing, when you're nervous, it sounds terrible. So, I mean, you know, if you have to have a glass of wine before you podcast, like go for it. Because I think you need to, the more relaxed you are and the more you yourself you are and you're not, you know, I've actually had famous, you know, like even John Lee, I think, say, oh yeah, when I was like super nervous or something, it was too canned, or I was thinking about the question next that I wanted to ask. And, you know, it just didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. But when you're relaxed and just having fun, it's like awesome.
Yeah, I would agree. Tons of great advice in there. It looks like you've got somewhat of a community. Have you built a community? Do you have a tribe, or do you feel like you're producing something for any number of people that kind of come and go?
Yeah, I definitely have very misfit following. It's funny. I totally go against what John Lee says about having an avatar. Now, for some podcasts, that completely works. And for marketing, of course, you know, you want to know who you're talking to. For me, I have probably just as many women listeners as I do men, because they're wanting to know what a real man is. They're wanting to know about business. They're wanting to up their game when it comes to communication and being confident. So in that aspect, they communicate with me. You know, they'll email me or message me and say, oh my gosh, I loved this or I loved that. And for me, I'm not so much into building big tribes or big followings. I'm more into the loyal, you know, the loyalty of it. Like, they love the show. They're messaging me saying, hey, when's the next episode coming out, you know, or this or that. And I feel like I am more on a personal, I can be more personal with them. So yes, I do have a community, but it is small. I don't strive. And in the beginning, I wasn't striving for that. I was, I kind of use this line, and it's definitely out of the Bible, but whosoever will, you know, really is wanting to know, what true masculinity is and what true femininity is, you know, and what true leadership is, and real marketing is real communication. So I kind of wanted a catch-all, which is a complete no-no, you know, that people will tell you, like, you shouldn't do that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I really think it's up to you and what you're wanting the show to be about. So I think it can be detrimental if you do that. You know, I get people coming up to me pitching the ideas with podcast. I want to do this idea about health. And I'll be like, okay, well, what about it? Like, what is different about this? Why is it unique? What is, you know, and it's very general. It's too general.
Yeah.
So I definitely don't advocate that. But I also know that people were going to be listening to the show not – and here's another thing. People are like, oh, it's gotta be content valuable and this and that. Well, some shows I was just talking life, nitty gritty stuff with some people, you know, or maybe I'm just on there talking about trust cycles and, you know, passive aggressive and versus aggressive communication. And so for me, I just felt like, you know, they are listening to it because of me delivering it and because of my passion behind seeing relationships grow stronger over time, whether you're married, whether it's your business relationship, whether it's, you know, seeing communication grow stronger. I feel like that was important to me. And I feel like the people that are still following me to this day are the same people pretty much that were on board from the beginning. And they're very loyal and they're not huge numbers, but I'm happy with them. They are a steady number though, for sure.
Do you mind sharing like what the numbers are?
No, not at all. So my numbers spiked whenever I had someone really, now are you talking about tribe numbers or actual like downloads?
Just a general estimate. And I ask because I think it's encouraging. I'm not one who is, I'm like you, I'm not after big numbers.
Right.
And I think it's unrealistic to think that you're going to get big numbers. So I think it's encouraging that you've hit 100 episodes, and I'd love to hear what your numbers are, just in general.
But hold on, for downloads or for like actual regular listeners?
Either or both.
Okay, so let's talk about downloads because I think that's huge, and people really get caught up on that. And I mean, they've even written articles about it, which I comment on them. So I've heard things like, if you don't have over 100 reviews and ratings, then your podcast isn't a real, you know, then you're just a hobby podcaster.
Right.
And, you know, whatever. People are going to have their opinions and that's fine. So I think I'm almost at 100 reviews and ratings. But all of mine, and here's the other thing too, mine were organic. I didn't go over there and be like, hey, you know, let's swap or let's do this. Now, somebody, you know, I want to give reviews and ratings to people. And I will actually listen to your show and review and rate it. And then they would come and say, hey, I'll listen to yours and review yours. And then I'd be like, okay, you know, whatever, but only if you listen to it, please listen to the show. I do not want to be soliciting reviews and ratings. So for me, my advice to you is, is it, I mean, why are you doing this? Is it about that? Is it about you growing? Like you said, sometimes I think it's unrealistic for people to have these high expectations. Like, I'm going to get 1,000 downloads in the first week, you know? So I normally, in the beginning, when I started out, I was getting a regular 200 downloads, like almost, I don't know if it was like every day, but like for the shows. And in the beginning, you do get a lot more. It would spike if I had a big guest. James Altucher actually did blow up my, I mean, it was crazy. I actually don't remember the numbers, but I mean, it was definitely like thousands and thousands of downloads like every day. And every time I promoted it, I would get more. So, and that can make you feel good, but actually it didn't, because then I think I did a solo one, and I was just teaching really about communication or something. And I got like 107.
Yeah, they all went away.
And the one thing I did learn at podcasting, and I think it was Andy Toe, who I really like, he said, if you have an average and it never changes, then you're doing something really good. And then if it will, you know, if you see that average going up. And so my average really was, 200 to 500 downloads with episodes coming out, you know, and they've always stayed that way. So I, you know, if I can stay between 200 to 500 and depending, you know, and I think over time people got used to it, so those numbers do go up, then I was happy. And I remember someone, a new guy, saying, oh my gosh, I got 200 downloads on this one episode. And I said, that is awesome. Like, it was like his third episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's amazing. I said, I know people that get like 11. I mean, Gavin, my husband, got like 7 downloads for like months, you know, the first couple of times in real estate on his podcast, the Real Estate Loop. Now he gets like 1,000, you know, like he had bigger pockets, give him a shout out, and people started to get to know him. And he's been at it for, you know, he's past 100 too. So now his actual regular ones are like way more than mine, 1,000, but he has a lot of people that are interested in real estate investing. So they're reaching out to him and they're wanting to know, you know, and there's not tons of real estate investing podcasts out there. So in my niche, it's personal development, business marketing, you know, sometimes we, you know, have some humor in there. There's tons of them out there that are listening. So for me to average 500, I think regularly is really good.
Yeah, absolutely.
And same within my community, you know, having 500 to 1,000. And I have a lot of people on my list, but some of them aren't interactive and I like interactive. Like I like that energy. I like people messaging me saying, Nicole, I loved what you posted on Facebook today. Or I loved, you know, this episode. I loved what you said about, I've had more people come out about relationships and communication and say, hey, this episode helped me with my marriage, or this episode, like, to me, that's what it's about. And yeah, if I can get, you know, 200 to 500 of faithful, loyal, that aren't leaving me, they'll, you know, if I put something out there or talk about a webinar that I've done, they're into it, then that's, to me, is worth it. I never wanted to take care of thousands of people.
Yeah.
So for me, some people want to, and that's totally cool. Like, hire the staff, blah, blah. But my goal right now is to raise my kids. So if I can, you know, keep abreast with my community, and I do actually, have had friendships form out of people that follow me and are on my list. So I actually meet with a friend of mine via Skype. We just chatted on Friday, and we try to talk like maybe once a month or something. And she lives, you know, in Philadelphia or something. So, you know, stuff like that, it's pretty cool. And that, to me, that's what it's worth. That's what I'm after, and that's what I got. So I'm satisfied with that. But some people, if your goals, you know, like, I agree with you, David, they could be real unrealistic. You know, if you're expecting thousands and thousands of downloads and you're just, you know, groveling at it and posting the same thing in 5 different groups, podcast groups, that's a turnoff to me. Like, I don't even want to look at your stuff. It's a total turnoff to me.
Yeah, it kind of goes.
And for marketing and pitching, to me, and this is what I teach, that's you being needy. And I'm not going to be needy. I just don't need to be needy with my podcasts. I'm sorry. And needy people do desperate things, and I don't trust needy people. And that's marketing 101. That's sales 101. And yeah, I'm not down with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have a good way to keep in touch with your audience and let them know about what you're doing and new episodes?
Yeah, definitely email list. I use GetResponse. I really like them. I like the stuff that they put in their actual. I mean, I tried the AWeber and the MailChimp, whatever, the monkey thing.
Yeah, that's MailChimp.
So I did a lot of trial. I do a lot of testing and what, you know, responds better. And I get out there more in the community. So what's cool about my tribe or whatever you want to call it, is that I am more hands-on. So they've heard me speak somewhere. They've heard me do a workshop. I'm involved with Florida partnerships with nonprofits. So I have a whole eclectic, you know, it's funny you were saying I was eclectic. I have a whole eclectic following, and I'll give them my card and just say, hey, check out my episode. And also another thing I tell people to do on your emails, just your regular emails, your email account, put at the bottom when you sign your name, you know, your tagline. So my tagline is what you do comes out of who you are. And then I say, hey, have you listened to my show where I interview amazing men about business tips and this and that?
Right.
So right there, any email I send, they know I have a podcast. Now locally, some people didn't know what a podcast was. So they were, they were even curious, like I can, you know, hook them in by just out of curiosity.
Right. Have you, actively tried to grow your podcast through, you know, traditional or digital marketing avenues as far as Twitter, Facebook ads, anything like that?
I never did Facebook ads. Gavin has, and he said it helped his with real estate. For me, no, just because I don't know. I just didn't. I have used Twitter and, you know, just tweeting out stuff.
But it's been mostly organic, just
very organic. Awesome. Yeah. But no, he actually paid and he said it was worth it. Like, and he did a very low scale. Like he kind of tested it out with real estate stuff and it helped. And then also to like, definitely get on other people's podcasts. So I've definitely been guests on other podcasts, you know, or written for like, you know, guest blog, write for other people if you can, or go and speak, do workshops. I know like me and you, we go to the podcast meetups and all of that.
Yep.
I think that's a great way to promote as well your show.
Have you tried to do any types of marketing, maybe even early on, that didn't work, that you you were trying to build an audience or do something that you thought might work? You tested something and it didn't?
I think testing your opt-ins. I think you should do that. I know Tim Page talked about that at Podcast Movement. I think it's really important. I remember doing a whole seminar, like training thing, and I gave it away for free on body language, and it totally tanked. And I actually thought it was really good. And I was trying to get a lot of opt-ins for that. And then I did a couple other lead magnet stuff that didn't work. I think my advice to people would be to test that stuff out, like really, you know, find out what it is they're looking for. I did one on the love languages, breaking it down as to what the kiss of death is, like when you're not expressing love language, and that did really well. Like People still ask me for that, and I'll just send it to them because it's free. You know, I'm just basically taking Gary Chapman's book and I condensed it down to like a 5-page report and just gave very simplistic scenarios of, you know, and what you. I mean, everybody needs to know that. Good grief, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that that and just really getting on other podcasts. You know, I think. Go ahead.
I was going to say, have you actively tried to get on other podcasts or?
I haven't done the emails, although I did think about it. No, I've had a lot of people just come and ask me, but I do like the idea of doing that, of making an email and saying, hey, giving it. I have had a lot of people come to me saying, hey, this person would be great for your show. This person would be great for your show. Oh, and by the way, I could also bring to your show this, this, and this that I've done. You know, so let me know. I think that's a great way. I think that's a great tactic to get on the podcast. So please give value first. So give me two people that I get to look at and say, hey, these guys might be a good fit. And I actually really value that when people suggest to me people for my show. And then if they say, hey, I too could offer you and talk about this, you know, talk about my son who blah, 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 and just what masculinity means, or talk about marketing and how you could communicate better to, you know, your tribe or whatever. So I think, yes, I think that's very important. I actively didn't do an email, but I would have people reach out to me and say, hey, will you be on my show?
Make yourself available.
definitely make yourself available. And definitely, I'm like Chris Brown, like, I will be pretty much on anyone's show unless it, I did have one crazy guy ask me, and it really showed me that he did not understand and didn't want to understand what my show was about. But he was really off color and very inappropriate is the word I would use. Sure. And I was like, dude, get a clue. Okay. And I mean, I was pretty like upfront with him, like, this isn't going to happen. And he actually called and was like, not taking no for an answer. And I was like, yeah, you need to get a life. So I've always said yes to people on their show, no matter what the audience number is, because I want to help out other podcasters.
That's awesome.
And I do have an eclectic array of things that I could talk about. So, I mean, I've been on relationship ones, I've been on health ones, I've been on, you know, a bunch of different ones. So I didn't feel bad when I heard Chris Brogan say, oh, I'll say yes to anybody's podcast. So if anybody wants to interview Chris Brogan, he probably would say yes.
Do you have
I interviewed him at Podcast Minutes. I actually didn't. Oh, that's another good tip. If you go to conferences, buy a freaking microphone and get your portable recorder, like a Roland or a Zoom.
Yeah.
And just interview. That's how I got Mark Marone. That's how I got Chris Brogan. Like, just go up and say, hey, can I take 10 minutes and ask you a few questions? Don't even say, can I interview you? Just say, can I ask a few questions?
Yeah, no, that's great. Make it seem the lower the barrier, lower the hurdle.
Lower that barrier, because you're there, dude, and they're right there. And, you know, and then it makes them feel like they're on the red carpet and they get to be interviewed. So
yeah, that's great.
You feel really cool walking around with that microphone. So,
yes, in fact, I think that's the first, was aware of you at the Podcast Movement, watching you go around and interviewing everybody. And I think I saw you interview, did you interview Pat Flynn in the little booth there?
Yeah, I got, with my Buzzsprout boys. Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you have any goals or where are you headed with your podcast? What's your objective or moving forward?
Oh my gosh. I saw that question. I was like, oh boy, I don't know.
Okay. If you don't have an objective, if you just want to keep it going.
Well, that's... I do. No, I actually do probably need to process it more. I need to talk about it more. So my goal, I'm actually on the fence right now. Like, I'm really, you know, I'm a spiritual person. So I pray about what I'm supposed to be doing. And I feel like I can't let go Real Time, Real Men Only, but like, I don't know where I want it to go. And so recently I've been thinking about doing just some solo episodes of, you know, what's going on and just kind of laying off interviews for now. I'm not sure why I feel like I want to do that, but I kind of want to talk about like politics and religion and society and culture. And I teach sociology at the college. And so just stuff that's going on in our world right now, I feel like, and I mean, again, this could totally be, you know, self-absorbed behavior. Like, maybe I just need to process this, but I don't know. I feel like I almost want to take it in that direction. And I don't want to ever say, oh, I'm not going to do interviews. Cause I still get requests. Like, even now, you know, people are asking, hey, this person would be great, blah, blah, blah. But for some reason, something in me right now isn't just real, you know, like hyped up to do that. And I want to do it like shorter snippets, like 15 minutes of just, hey, I'm talking about, you know, like living from your heart or the depthness of, you know, maintaining your relationship or communication. I do find right now I am being asked more about relationships and confidence and body language and communication. So, and less on the business side of it. So less about marketing and business. And, you know, for a while there, I had a few interviews where they would just talk about their story in the business and we'd talk about tips and tactics. And I was like, you know, this isn't really feeding my fire. So I'm kind of like navigating those waters right now with Real Time, Real Men Only. And sure, even thinking about, I have talked about doing a new show, and maybe putting Real Time, Real Men Only, you know, to rest. So I'm kind of in that weird transition. But something will happen this year for sure. Like within the next couple months, I will make some sort of decision and be, you know, out there with it.
Yeah, I appreciate
you. I'm pretty transparent. Like, I don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, I appreciate you being open and honest.
So,
well, Nick, I want to respect your time, but I have to ask, what is the most remarkable podcast that you listen to?
Yeah, I saw that. And that was such a hard question for me because I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I don't want to put one or the other on the pedestal.
Sure.
I will say this, and I don't know if you know him, David, but Kevin Rogers. Do you know who Kevin Rogers is?
I don't.
Okay, so he has the truth about marketing, and he lives in Florida, and he is an amazing copywriter, an amazing, he's the copy chief is what they call him.
Okay.
And he is an amazing storyteller. Sometimes I just love to listen to him talk because he used to be a comedian, and he just understands hooks. He understands like even inflection on when you're talking and telling a story. And it's almost like listening to someone read you a story, and it's informational and it's valuable. So The Truth About Marketing with Kevin Rogers is someone I love. I was a huge Altucher fan, for a while. I've definitely taken a back seat for some reason. I don't know why. I just, once in a while, I'll still listen to him depending on guests that he has. But I used to listen to the James Altucher and Ask Altucher. And then Jason Bernard, Mastermind Talks podcast. So what he does, it's really cool. He will take these conferences that he does that are amazing, and he will put the speakers like on the show, like on the, as a podcast episode, or he used to interview. I think now sometimes he'll just talk and do solo. So he's kind of like me. He's a little more eclectic where, and I've done that. I've actually spoken a few places and posted it as a show, or, as an episode.
Right.
So I would say right now I'm totally into those. And then I get my church on and I listen to, John Eldridge, which is the Ransom Heart podcast.
Okay.
I really like them because they do talk a lot about masculinity and femininity. That kind of inspired me to do Real Time, Real Men Only, because I felt like in teaching college that these men and women, these freshmen, were so kind of confused about their roles in society and, who they were as a woman or as a male. And now it's become very political, but at the end of the day, your gender is very much a part of who you are. And I believe it holds a huge part to your destiny. Mm-hmm. So that actually was one of the reasons what inspired me to do Real Time, Real Men Only. And, to see men in a different light than just how women view men and vice versa, how men view women.
Sure.
So that's very dear to my heart. And I really enjoy that podcast. And then sometimes I'll listen to like the NPR ones here and there. Like my husband likes to listen, we'll listen to them in the car.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, Kevin Rogers, Truth About Marketing, and you should tune in because you would love him, is really good. And they're short because I have like definitely attention span issues. Tim Ferriss is the only one I know right now who can get away with doing like 2-hour interviews.
Yeah.
I did listen to, if it's someone I like Laird Hamilton or, he had someone, Morgan Spurlock, who I adore. Like I listened to that episode. But I always fast forward through the advertisements because for me, we don't have cable and I don't want to hear commercials.
Yeah. And I'm with you. It's about 4 minutes and then you get to the 4 or 5 minute mark and then you start the podcast.
Right. So now I'm not saying that you shouldn't do that. But I love the idea, and I will say I do like how Tim does it, where he is kind of like sponsoring or talking about the show, the whatever it is he's using, because he's used it. So he's
right.
Actually telling you. So it's really more of a credible, as far as marketing goes, commercial. But when you're just kind of doing like these boring, and that would be my other tip. I know you didn't ask, but I'm going to tell you another tip.
Please, please.
The intro to your podcast. Now, I totally went against what Jeff Brown said. And to this day, I mean, he loves me and I love him, but he was like wanting me to do this really like, kind of clear cut, kind of like what everybody else was doing to the intro. And right now I have a podcast client and I said, nah, man, let's do a pattern interrupt. So that's where like what my intro is, can I get a real man here? And then, if it bursts into this voiceover guy who's amazing, Jeremy Ryan. He's done like 4 commercials before and stuff, and worth paying him to do an intro. And he's doing the music behind it, and it's going along with what he's saying. Now, I did cut my intro a lot shorter now. It used to be almost like a minute and something long, and I personally wrote the script for it. But I feel like making it funny or making it different is really important in the beginning of the intro. And also storytelling, like, okay, and you know, marketing, okay, what is the problem? So right now my client is in the health niche. Well, the problem is in the health niche, you hear every kind of, you know, baloney about what's in and what's not with health and fitness, right? I mean, you hear, hey, take this magical pill and, yeah, you know, eat this fad diet. Well, I told him, I said, hey, that should be our intro. Like, we need to make it real where everybody can relate to that intro. And so we had so much fun crafting a script for his intro. I cannot wait till it comes out. And he's actually going to use my guy, and we're going to make some funny, you know, produce some funny music behind it and everything. But I just think it's fun to do it different. You know, for a while there, I was hearing everybody do theirs where this show is about blah, blah, blah. And in marketing for me, I always teach, you want to intrigue, you don't want to give information. And that's very going against the grain, because everybody says, oh, wait, I want to know what this podcast is about. But when I intrigue you and I hook you, you're going to stay anyway. It's just like hooking a fish. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
I'm going to pull you up out of that water anyway, because you're already hooked onto that hook. So I just think taking a risk and being a little different or a little out of the box for your intro, I would highly encourage people to do that.
That's great. Well, Nick, where can we go to learn more about you?
You can go to Rap with Nick, R-A-P with N-I-C.com. And most people ask me if I'm a rapper, and I have rapped before, but that isn't why I, funny backstory, I don't know how much time you have, but the funny backstory to that is I was selling wraps. Okay, so I'm a very thin girl, and I was actually selling body wraps to people. And they were laughing because they're like, Nicole, how can you sell wraps when you're not even overweight? And I'm like, oh, it's just how you hook them in, you know, it's just the sale. So I started thinking about the word. I was like, man, I want to rap with you someday. Like, let's talk, let's riff, let's talk about this. You know, we talk about deep subjects and stuff. And so I started thinking, well, rap, what does rap mean? And I actually looked up the word, and it means orator. It means someone who orally is telling a story or expressing. I mean, that's what rap music is. The good rap music back in the day used to be storytelling.
Right.
And nowadays, I have no idea what it is. But anyway, rap was about storytelling. It was about orotation, oral history, oral story telling. And so I was like, well, that's what a podcast is. You know, I mean, that's what I'm all about, is rapping with people and talking with them and getting to know them and their story and whatnot. And that is how the name came about, Rap with Nick, and the fact that marketing tactic, nobody else has that anywhere in the world.
yeah, it's great.
So it's got my name in it, and people want to rap with me, just go to rapwithnic.com. So it had a nice ring to it, too.
Yeah, I like it. And I'm going to include a link to that in my notes on my notes page, along with some of the other things you've mentioned.
Yeah. And for any, you know, since this is, I love your name, Remarkable Podcast, for people that are looking into podcasting, I have a free report about the 7 deadly sins of podcasting, which I made all those mistakes, not growing my list right away and not doing all that stuff. And yeah, so you can grab that too while you're there.
And they can find that at Rap with Nick.
Yep.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for having me on your show. This has been awesome. I really enjoyed it.
Nick, thank you for your time. The pleasure's been all mine.
All right, you take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. I appreciate you taking time to listen, and I hope you took away some helpful tips. You can find my notes from this interview, relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/Nick. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/NIC. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something to help you with your podcast or business, please do me a favor and share it with someone else. And also, just like on Amazon, user reviews let people know if the show is worth listening to or not. So if you don't mind, please take a minute to head over to iTunes and leave me an honest review. I would greatly appreciate it. And feel free to email me if you have a question about marketing, a suggestion, or feedback, or if you just want to connect. You can reach me at dave@supersimple.com. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small-batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality single-origin coffee from around the world. perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a coffee snob with 9 different ways to make coffee at home, I can tell you that if you've never had coffee brewed within 72 hours, you do not know what you're missing. Fresh coffee is night and day from anything you've ever purchased in a grocery store. So head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com to check out their monthly subscription plan so you can get it fresh to your door. You can use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% on your first purchase of either their Explorer or Adventurer subscriptions. That's BethesdaCoffee.com, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game apps, and radio. Learn more or contact them today at Zymer.co. That's Zymer.co. Mention that you heard them here on the Remarkable Podcast and save 50% off of any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.